Department of Education versus Davidson. Mark R. Henry, Attorney General, Cynthia D. Bailey. Deputy Attorney General, Ronald C. Forehansky, Assistant Attorney General. Mona H. Siddiqui, Assistant Attorney General, Appellant Counsel. Brian Davidson, pro se, appellee.
Before you start, we have three cases that are styled similarly. Each case will be heard for 30 minutes. The first one is Loudoun County School Board versus Davidson. The second one is Virginia Education Association versus Davidson. And the third, first is Department of Education versus Davidson. Then Loudoun County School Board versus Davidson. Then Virginia Education Association versus Davidson. This is the first case. Each case will be allotted 30 minutes, and you may proceed.
May it please the Court, good morning. My name is Mona Siddiqui, and I represent the Commonwealth of Virginia Department of Education. Please note that I would like to reserve about 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Well, we'll give you three, and you can consider what about means.
So there are three fundamental reasons why the lower court's judgment was erroneous. First, the trial court's determination that a teacher performance indicator must be used by a local school division to be deemed confidential is inconsistent with the statutory construction of 22.1-295(1)(c) as amended in 2013, and also inconsistent with the General Assembly's expressed purpose to protect the confidentiality of all teacher performance indicators as a matter of law. Second, the trial court's determination that teacher performance indicators must be used to be confidential is also disregards the Department of Education's guidelines for uniform performance standards for teachers, the only authority in Virginia that actually defines and explains what teacher performance indicators are. And third, it was an error to put the department in the improper position of scrutinizing schools on their adequate use of teacher performance indicators in order to respond to a Freedom of Information Act request. So I'd like to address each three of these aspects in a little bit more detail. My first point being the notion that teacher performance indicators must be used to be confidential misinterprets the plain language of the statute 22.1-295(1)(c), and I refer you to appellant's brief on page 12. The first sentence of the statute's independent clause, which is separated by commas, refers to other data used. That other data used is not an exception to the confidentiality provision as the trial court interprets, but it's merely a disjunctive clause, and if it's removed from the sentence, it clearly states that teacher performance indicators that are maintained in a teacher's personnel file or otherwise shall be confidential. And so whether or not the indicators are actually used is irrelevant in interpreting the plain meaning of the statute, which is to protect the indicators as a matter of law. And then it's after the general definition is the point at which the statute then begins to lay out the narrow exceptions, which are specified in subsection 1, 2, and 3, and then again in the last sentence, which authorizes the release of non-identifying aggregate data, which also supports the inference that teacher performance indicators that are identifying individual teachers and are not aggregate are meant to be confidential as a matter of law. But even if this court finds that the 2013 literal construction of that statute may have been ambiguous, I refer you to Nielsen versus Arlington, which is a 2015 Supreme Court case, which stands for the proposition that when a statute is obscure or its meaning is doubtful, a court will give great weight and sometimes follow the interpretation which those whose duty it has been to administer have placed upon it. So there are some situations that a court may afford greater weight than normal to an agency's interpretation if the court finds that the statute may have been ambiguous. My second point is that the notion that indicators must actually be used to be confidential is also not consistent with the Department of Education guidelines for uniform performance standards for teachers. This is the guidance document that schools are required by statute to use as a basis to develop their own teacher evaluation systems. And I refer you to the appendix beginning on page 333 is where the guidelines begin and they end at 415. There's no federal statute or a state statute that defines the term teacher performance indicator as a term of art, but the DOE, the department, guidelines do. And that definition and explanation is on page 346 of the appendix. And so the guidelines explain the purpose of teacher performance indicators, and they also provide many examples of sample indicators that can be used to evaluate teachers. And those examples begin on 347 and they go on to 350. And they specifically designate student growth percentile data as one type of a teacher performance indicator. And that's specifically on page 371 and 380. And a few months after these guidelines became a requirement in July 2012, that's the date they became effective, it was only a few months after that the 2013 General Assembly added the confidentiality provision of Section C to 22.1-295.1 and then actually codified the term teacher performance indicator that was already pre-existing in the guidelines. So
isn't the problem with this particular argument, correct me if I'm wrong, the trial judge says that at the time of the court's ruling, 22.1-295.1 subsection C provided the confidentiality extended to data that was used by the local school board. Later, the General Assembly amended the statute. It's not applicable to this case. This is what the trial judge said. To able to be used by the school board. Am I correct about the judge's ruling? He said the confidentiality issue doesn't apply to this case. It may to the next one. But this data was not used by the local school board.
Right, and that's where the department disagrees with the trial court's interpretation of that particular statute. As I mentioned, that specific phrase that requires that sort of says or other data used is disjunctive in nature, and it is not applicable to teacher performance indicators. They sort of stand on their own. And then in addition to that, there may be other data that's used to evaluate teachers, but teacher performance indicators, as a matter of law, were deemed confidential in the 2013 statute as well as the 2016 statute.
That really is the whole debate, though, isn't it? I mean, if there were no commas creating this independent clause, the use by qualifier would apply to both subjects, both indicators and data. So, correct me if I'm wrong, this entire case depends entirely on grammar.
Well, we propose that the 2016 amendment...
No, forget the 2016 amendment. The 2013 statute. You have indicators, comma, or other data used by, comma, and then it follows. If there were no commas, the other data used by would be read under proper grammar to apply to both subjects, both indicators and data. But the commas, as you argue, set out the clause as a freestanding clause, an independent clause.
Right. They are data that, in addition to teacher performance indicators, something that may not be a teacher performance indicator that also evaluates teachers. For example, perhaps an classroom observation or some other type of data that evaluates the teacher, but it doesn't fall under the definition of a teacher performance indicator. Which
right. So, I mean, it boils down to whether or not that grammatical point, which is a true grammatical point, is strong enough to shut down any policy inferences we would draw otherwise from the statute. Am I oversimplifying this?
Would you repeat your statement, please?
The commas create follow a grammatical rule and support your inference, which is the use by
yes.
only modifies data, that doesn't modify indicators.
That's exactly
right. So if we were in an English grammar class, you would win that hands down. There'd be no argument. But the question is that strong enough, and it may very well be strong enough, to overcome any opposite inference that might be drawn from the policy of the statute? Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yes, and I would agree with that, and I think that the department guidelines also are an additional factor that support that particular literal reading of that statute.
Well, that's a little problematic because the whole Chevron doctrine is questionable under Virginia jurisprudence. We have a very discretionary use of that. So simply throwing out that an agency interpretation is this way or that way doesn't have anywhere near the weight it would have in other contexts.
But it counts for something.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, I would like to go a little bit into the guidelines so I may talk about the way it characterizes the usage of teacher performance indicators, because I believe that's important in thinking about the literal construction as well. So the guidelines specifically do not designate indicators based on whether they're used by that local school division. They designate an indicator in the guidelines based on its potential measure of performance standard, regardless of when or whether it's eventually used by that school division. And that's in part, and this is very important, that guidelines afford schools flexibility to use these indicators depending on its appropriateness and on a variety of factors that schools have been given the discretion to consider in deciding which indicators to use. And so this flexibility and deference that's afforded to school divisions in selecting which specific indicators to use doesn't mean that the indicators that aren't used to evaluate a particular set of teachers for a particular year are no longer meet the definition of teacher performance indicator. So it's an absurd interpretation of the confidentiality provision to actually allow the public to use a teacher performance indicator to evaluate a teacher if a school has determined that a particular teacher performance indicator may not have been appropriate to use in the evaluation for that particular teacher.
Why is that absurd? Doesn't the public get to make its own mind up on such things?
Well, but that is the whole purpose of the confidentiality provisions of teacher performance indicators. So if you read the statute where it says being used by, it doesn't necessarily say local school division. It's also, you know, could it be used by the public, used by anybody?
So, what about opposing counsel's statement in its brief regarding the February 19th, 2016 hearing where the testimony indicates that some of this information is actually on public websites and has been obtained through FOIA requests?
Are you referring to teacher information? Because it's my understanding that that the appellee's brief...
Average SOL scores by individual teachers?
No, that is not correct. That is not correct.
So you're saying this information, the testimony of this person is just not true?
Right. It's my understanding that the appellee is relying on his own testimony to make that assertion, and it is addressed in the appellant's reply brief. There is no basis for that. Teacher information is not posted on the department's website.
You had wanted to save some time, around 3 minutes, as I remember.
Yes,
you're
sir.
At 2:18.
Yes, I'd like to end my argument by requesting, just want to point out that just the harm, if the lower court's judgment is upheld, there will be irreparable harm to public school teachers all over Virginia. Even though the 2016 General Assembly made sure that wrong interpretation won't happen again, the department will be ordered to release 3 years' worth of data, confidential information about math and English teachers who have no control over whether a school uses that confidential evaluation about them in their evaluations. And it's worth noting that soon after the lower court's ruling, Mr. Davidson and another Virginia citizen submitted similar FOIA requests to DOE for the same type of information from many other local school divisions. So there will be far-reaching implications that go beyond Loudoun County teachers. And so for all these reasons, the department is asking you to reverse the erroneous ruling of the trial court, to find the records that Mr. Davison requested are confidential under 22.1-295(1)(c) as a matter of law, and deny Mr. Davison's verified petition for a writ of mandamus. We also request that this court overturn the trial court's award of attorney's fees and costs to Mr. Davison because the underlying judgment was in error. FOIA is not applicable to records held by public bodies that are otherwise specifically excluded by law, which in this case is the confidentiality provision of 22.1-295(1)(c). Thank you.
You have 42 seconds remaining.
May it please the court, my name is Brian Davison, arguing on behalf as the appellee. First, I'd like to address the fees should be awarded in this case. You know, BDOE did not appeal the trial court's ruling on the student record exemption. And in fact, they've already released data based on that. So we basically won on their primary original argument, and that's where most of the costs were incurred. So regardless of the interpretation of 22.1295(c), which we'll argue here today, all the costs were basically incurred in that beginning portion.
Would that necessitate a remand, though, to parse? Because obviously some effort had to go into this other piece. I don't know what's going to happen with this other piece, but if it doesn't break your way, wouldn't there need to be a sifting of that?
Yes, Your Honor, I would understand if it were remanded. Second, this court should note that the BDOE does not appeal either the trial court's ruling on the personnel records exemption, the inapplicability of the Data Collection Act, or the trial court's modified order when they assess fees against the school board. So unlike the Daily Press versus Circuit Courts case that y'all heard recently, neither party has ever asserted that Loudoun County is the custodian of the records. Everybody acknowledges that BDOE is the custodian. And in fact, in the Loudoun case, a trial court ruled that BDOE was the custodian. So everything relates to here. And in the other cases, I believe the only thing that is applicable on appeal here today is 22.1295, because as the custodian, they have to appeal all the issues.
And counsel, I'd like to, it's interesting that my colleague used the term parse, because, and we've been talking about how this really comes down to grammar, which is a delicious irony with regard to a case involving public schools. I'd like to...
Delicious.
I'd like to...
Tasty.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. I'd like to actually, if you've got 22.1295 in front of you, I'd like to parse it with you.
Sure.
And I'm going to channel my late grandmother, who was an English teacher. Used by a local school board is the key. That is an adjectival phrase that modifies a noun. And we have to decide, does it modify the noun teacher performance indicators, or does it modify the noun other data, or does it modify both of them? Now, I don't know that you have looked at the case of our recent case of Butler versus Fairfax County School Board in 2015, but we actually decided that precise issue in Butler. And in Butler, we adopted the rule of the last antecedent with regard to this precise question of structure. And I'm going to quote from Butler. Under that rule, referential and qualifying words and phrases where no contrary intention appears refer solely to the last antecedent. The last antecedent is the last word, phrase, or clause that can be made an antecedent without impairing the meaning of the sentence. So adopting that ruling from 2015, we would have to find that the phrase, the adjectival phrase used by a local school board, modifies other data and not teacher performance indicators. Your response.
Thank you. I got multiple points. That was going to be my last address. So, before I get to that, just real quick, I know there's been some discussion of the last phrase where it says non-identifying aggregate teacher performance indicators. Hopefully in my chart I indicated that even if you have a teacher performance indicator that's used, as long as you aggregate it, non-identified, it's done. But the portion or other data at the end does not mean that only the non-identifying aggregate data, your teacher performance data. Any other data outside that is not limited. But let me get to your point. So two points. First, I work in business intelligence, where we create performance indicators. That's my job in terms of, you know, collecting data and putting in that. And the notion of what an indicator is, in other words, I would argue that even if you took that phrase out, right, for example, or other data collected by the Department of Education, even if you took that phrase out, then teacher performance indicators, they were not. In other words, you start with a bunch of data, then you create metrics. And for example, I showed a whole bunch of...
Before you get too far down there, I'm sorry, did you say they're not teacher performance indicators?
In Loudoun County. In fact, in the trial court's ruling versus Davison versus Loudoun County public schools, another trial court has ruled on this already, and they've indicated clearly SGPs are not performance indicators in Loudoun County public schools. So my whole argument is, when we had the hearing in December 2014, if Loudoun County had simply used them as indicators for 1%, then they would be performance indicators. But I showed a whole bunch of data. For example, you could argue the number of absences of a student, for example, is an indicator of how engaging the teacher is. The number of times they go to the bathroom, you could in theory say the number of extracurricular activities. They are actually taking SOL scores by grade and by school and posting them on the web. So in the trial court, I showed an example to their chief of staff that here are average SOL scores for your teachers in the third grade. And now you don't use SOL scores because all of this data is not created until after their teacher evaluations are in. And I think there was a misspelling in the transcript, but they would have to literally have ESP to actually use them. But the whole question is, if you're taking average SOL scores and posting them on the web, that's VDOE that's doing it. Loudoun County School Board knows it. If you're doing that, how can that be confidential? And I would like to point to a couple of cases, Davenport versus Little, Bowser, and Smith versus Bryant, which they say,
But isn't the difference, this allows someone to figure out what an individual teacher is doing as opposed to a system-wide performance level, right?
Well, I'm saying...
So isn't there a difference...
If you're giving an average SOL score for a teacher, which is what they've done, right? So in, there's only one teacher.
So they're posting it by teacher.
Well, they're not saying the teacher, but there's only one teacher in that school, in that grade, in multiple schools. So I can tell you what the average SOL score, and I showed, that was one of the key pieces of rebuttal evidence. In other words, they can't come up in here and say all of these are confidential when they are posting this on the web. Now, they didn't violate the law because nobody is using these SOL scores. In every other state, you've heard this wide debate on should these be used, and teachers are up in arms. You probably have never heard of this issue before here. Why? Because their policy directors signed assurances to the federal government that they were using this. And I would like to point...
Now, sir, does your argument come back to whether they're being used? And if so, would you answer Justice Mims' question?
Yes, Your Honor. So I would argue two things. I would argue that in Loudoun County, as the trial court in Davison versus LCPS ruled, SGPs are not teacher performance indicators.
And was that because that trial court found they were not being used?
Not only were they not being used, in the VDOE teacher evaluation guide, they have six standards. One of the standards is student progress. You get a rating of 0 to 4. In order to justify a rating of 3, they create a list of 3 to 5 teacher performance indicators and rate you on those. SGPs are not listed as a teacher performance indicator in there. In the VDOE suggested evaluation guide, they have that. They said, you know, use student growth data to show that you're doing growth. What Loudoun did, and what if you look at the transcript for the February 2016 hearing, Loudoun took indicators from other areas, such as you will communicate with parents, right? And they said, you were communicating with the student about how they're doing. So Loudoun removed the suggested teacher performance indicator from the guide, and it's not found anywhere in the Loudoun guide. At the bottom, they have various pieces of data. But the whole point is, if Loudoun said, hey, this is a teacher performance indicator that we are going to use, right, then you could possibly make the argument that excluding that clause, SGPs are a teacher performance indicator. But they're not. Loudoun removed that. And they admitted at trial that the VDOE guide is only suggested. They are not prescriptive, and anybody can use whatever they want. Now,
Can I interrupt you for a second? But why wouldn't student growth percentages be very much an indicator of the performance of a teacher? I mean, putting aside all the Who Shot John guideline remarks, it just seems logical that it would be. Isn't that in part why you want it? To make that same judgment by the on behalf of the public?
There's multiple reasons. So let me make one point. So SOL scores seem like they would be an indicator of student performance. But I think everybody in this courtroom agrees SOL average scores are not. What they tell you is how smart are the kids in that classroom and how rich are they, right? So what the student may think is not. Now, SGPs, I believe, I brought an expert witness, Professor Friedman, who's done a lot of work, believes, and the U.S. Department of Education, and Dr. Susbury testified that the only acceptable definition of student growth under the federal standards is growth on a statewide standardized test that met the applicable guidelines. So it's my contention that SGPs should be used, that they were required to be used, and that one of the reasons that this court should question the testimony and the assertions of BDOE is when you sign assurances every year to the U.S. Department of Education to get millions of dollars saying that we are using student growth, and that student growth is the only approved one in Virginia is SGPs, and then they know that none of the districts are doing it. I FOIA'd 8-9 districts. There was one district who was doing it, Prince William. No, every one of the other districts says, we're not using SGPs. But if you get SOLs and SGPs, it doesn't allow you to just rate teachers. So I've kind of made public statements that I'm not going to identify the bad teachers, right? I mean, that does no one any good, right? But one of the policy arguments that the public is trying to get out is, how do you pay teachers? The teacher of the year, a couple of years ago, he was a liberal arts major, but he was in the fifth grade in a Loudoun school with 75% free and reduced lunch. They had him teach all the math students. This school scored off the charts in terms of growth. He was about 9 years in, making $50,000. In Loudoun, if you're 30, step 30, you make $100,000. He switched to be an assistant principal because he can't make any money, and he's forced to go up to seniority. In order for me to tie teachers, anonymous teachers, to their salary, I need to know their names. I can force Loudoun, and I already have, to give me all the teacher income data. But in order to show that there's no difference in performance after 3 years on the job, in order to show there's no difference in performance between a third-year teacher making 50 and a step 30 making $100,000, and there's literally no way for that teacher to get more income.
I think we get the rationale behind the need or the desire to obtain the information, but from a technical point of view, we've got to interpret the phrase indicator, performance indicator.
Correct.
Again, why wouldn't SOL be within the umbrella of that concept?
Okay. So I would argue that the change in statute is clearly indicative, and there were four or five indicators that I discussed at the trial court that are applicable. So I would argue that any of the following could be teacher performance indicators if you class sizes. So if I have one teacher teaching 15, another teaching 25, I could use that in their performance evaluation. Parent-student ratings of teachers. I showed a website that had specifically where parents and students rated teachers. If you notice in the change statute, it restricts the clause that says prepared for or by DDOE of the school board. In other words, you can't take external grade schools or these other things.
I'm sorry to interrupt you again, but did the trial court interpret the phrase teacher performance indicators to include the student growth percentages and thus the SOL test scores?
I believe that the trial court ruling was that they were not teacher performance indicators.
Mark, is that at JA 973, 1253, 1255, 56? Is that what you're relying on?
Right. That they were not teacher performance indicators. They could be. They could be used as if the school board had included it in their teacher evaluation guidelines as one of the bulleted items up at the top, and if they had used those.
Well, so performance indicators that are used versus performance indicators that are not used, my question is, used or not used, are they within the definition of teacher performance indicators?
I'm making the assertion that they have to be used, but even if that is not on the table, I'm arguing that in Loudoun, because their teacher evaluation guide did not include a growth measure in those bulleted items.
Right, but we're interpreting a statewide statute, not interpreting the guidelines of Loudoun County. What does the expression teacher performance indicators mean for every single school system in the Commonwealth of Virginia?
So, Your Honor, I would respectfully suggest that I do not believe that it means data that could be used if a school wished to put it in their evaluation guide. I believe
on the comma argument, Aren't you saying that because of this circuit court decision that says SGPs are not TPIs, that we fall within the other data used by the local school board? What you're trying to get is other data used by the local school board, and this was not used.
I'm arguing a couple things that if they had said teacher performance indicators and data that could and data that was used by the school board, those would possibly be two separate. The inclusion of the word other meant that other data used by the school board in references back to teacher performance indicators, number one. Second, other data used by the school board is clearly not applicable here because they didn't use it. But I'm arguing that even if that phrase is taken out, that SGPs and a growth measure were not teacher performance indicators in Loudoun. All of their allowed teacher performance indicators only said if you communicate growth. They just simply took out the requirement to measure growth. Respectfully, Your Honor. Thank you.
Rebuttal.
I would just like to add that there is unrefuted testimony in the record that student growth percentiles are a valid means to evaluate teachers. They are considered a type of teacher performance indicator, and that can be found on appellant's brief, page 12.
What did the trial court rule, and is this a question of fact or law? Did the trial court rule that teacher performance indicators include this or doesn't include it, putting aside whether it's used or not used?
Well, the question here, it's a question of law, not a question of fact. It's an interpretation of the law, and the trial court misinterpreted the statement used.
Right, but his argument is used or not used. It's not it anyway.
Well, teacher performance, student growth percentile data is considered a teacher performance indicator, can be used as a teacher performance indicator. There was testimony by the appellee's expert witness, Dr. Friedman. There was testimony by the Department of Education.
But what were the findings of fact by the court on the issue?
Well, the finding of fact was that Loudoun County Public Schools did not actually use student growth percentile data to evaluate their teachers, and because they didn't use that data, it's not really a teacher performance indicator. That was the trial court's interpretation, but we disagree with that interpretation. Whether or not it's used is irrelevant to the literal statutory construction of the, and I would agree that the word used modifies the term other data as the last antecedent.
Has she answered your question?
Yes.
Your time has expired. Call the next case.